Tom, we're going to replay an interview we did earlier this afternoon with Eric Girard, who, beyond being the finance minister, of course, is the minister responsible for relations with English-speaking Quebecers.
Exactly.
I want you to hear one clip. I don't know if this needs context or not, but I asked him, first of all, what he thought with respect to some of these new provisions, you know, where you have to call the city and you get that, please identify yourself, good attestation, et cetera, et cetera. So listen to this.
If Côte Saint-Luc wants to mock the French language or the bill, that's, they're entitled to their opinion, but I don't think that's responsible.
So that was in reference to what Côte Saint-Luc did, of course, which is suggest that, you know, you didn't need to go back 20 generations. You could just press two.
You didn't need your grade three report.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You just press two. But then he seemed, you know, because he realizes, I think we played him a little montage of some callers being very upset with this when it was announced. And he seemed to just kind of suggest that, you know what, don't worry, this is new. We can adapt. Brian, play that clip.
If every Anglophone feels that way a year from now, and we recognize that it's not helpful, we'll adjust.
How do you do that, Tom?
Well, which article is he proposing to change? But he's also saying if every Anglophone, so maybe if he finds one that's on his side, he won't change anything. But more importantly, this is what I call a straw man argument. And in the clips from the news before, we heard exactly the same thing from Crosswell ago. It's an old trick in politics. You restate the case. You're giving the context, you're deciding what you're debating. So what Legault says is, well, this is about protecting the French language. What have you got against protecting the French language? I know lots of English people who want to protect the French language. You know what, Aaron and Natasha? He's right. I'm one of them. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that I live in a province that's unique and a place that's unique, and I want the French language to be protected and to thrive. But what I find absurd is to have a law with completely... I'm going to look for the right word, because the one that comes to mind is one I don't want to be quoted on yet. The provisions of Bill 96 concerning search and seizure are from another time, another place, and have no place anywhere in North America, because we have charters of rights and bills of rights. Oh, but we don't in Quebec, because we removed the Bill of Rights to give the language police the power to come in and you seize your computers and your cell phone if, on an unsworn affidavit and an anonymous source, they're told you're not using French properly. I don't like the fact that we've got a law that says we're going to put this all online. You're going to tell us how many of your employees speak French, and people who want to hate you because they think you don't have enough French-speaking people in your business are going to be able to have all the information about you and the other directors of the company and go after you in any way that they consider fit. So this is the type of world we're talking about. I know, by the way, that Eric Girard has been briefed in detail about the effects of Bill 96 on the ability long-term to provide access to English language health and social services in Quebec. He's playing ostrich with that, too. He pretends it doesn't exist. I'm not convinced. I know that François Legault has never read Bill 96. From everything I've heard the man say since this thing was talked about in its first form to today, I am convinced he's never read it. I kind of thought, you know, given his background and his thorough approach, that maybe Eric Girard had read it. After I listened to the generalities that we were subjected to again today, I'm no longer convinced that he has.
Yeah, okay. James Many said the same thing. I that interview left me totally dejected. If you could have heard how many times he said, and you will hear it coming up at 5:35, Tom, he said, you know, living in Quebec is wonderful, and we all know what a great place to live. Nobody's arguing that. And I said, I love Quebec. I love French. I don't love having to now declare in good faith that I deserve service in English.
Exactly. And so this is, you know, he restates the case. He says, oh, well, what we're debating is whether or not you care about the French language. Actually, no, that's not what we're debating about. We're debating about whether somebody who immigrates here with their whole family from Australia, because they've got very specific talents that a business needs here, and they're being told, by the way, within 6 months, you got to learn French and you're not going to have access to the English services that actually exist. And by the way, if you're the person that's being recruited in Philadelphia because the insurance company in Montreal that needs your specific skills, and you're told, yes, it used to be 6 years of temporary stay for your kids to go into English school, but we've just turned that from six into three, and we didn't tell your employer and we didn't tell you, welcome to Quebec. I mean, this is the surprise package that Bill 96 has turned out to be for a lot of people. And it's not fair. And it is not a way of protecting the French language to say that that expert from Philadelphia is not allowed to send their kids to English school if they're coming here and helping build the place. They'll be part of it. You know, the other thing that Dubreuil did in his statement yesterday is that he basically put a circle around everybody who's here temporarily and really making them uncomfortable and saying, as an averred fact, pretending that it's actually something that's established, that there's an anglicization of Montreal. There is no evidence of that. And in fact, there's never been a higher proportion of people in Greater Montreal who can hold a conversation in French. But what they're trying to say is, oh, well, because of the students at McGill and Concordia, and they specifically talk about that all the time. If I were giving advice to McGill and Concordia, it would be, why don't you start paying attention to what the Quebec government and people around it are saying about you, because you're going to be targeted.
Tom, let's move on from that to really what's going to be the big news story of the day, I guess, south of the border for sure. Donald Trump just becoming the first president, sitting former president, either way, to be federally indicted on criminal charges. So let's pick up on that.
Well, I'm going to give homework to our listeners for the first time since I've been doing this show with you guys for 5 years. I would strongly suggest that if you're interested, find online, and it's quite easy to find, the full version of the indictment against Trump. I read the whole thing from end to end this afternoon. It's about 50 pages or so. You know, when I was working in a private law firm, one of my seniors one day looked at one of my proceedings. He said, it's good, all the stuff's in there. But he says, you're not telling a story. He says, you can have all those facts, but try to draw the person in, whether it's a judge or somebody, that tell a story with the same facts. The person who was there, Jack Smith, who put this thing together, is a very deeply experienced prosecutor. But he tells a story in those 50 pages. And we've both, all three of us have been talking about Trump. What a scoundrel. What a liar. What a nincompoop. I mean, you know, there's no adjective that's good enough. Read the indictment, because it talks about his fraudulent statements. It talks about his false statements. It talks about his fictitious statements. Those are actually three words that keep coming back in it. And they show pictures. They have pictures of the bathroom. They have pictures of the stage. They know exactly how many boxes there were. They went through all the tapes from security. It reminds one of when Conrad Black was filmed taking boxes out of his company
that
wound up part of his trial in the States. So they've got all of this stuff on Trump. And by the way, it tells a story. It tells a story better than anybody in a conversation or a single anecdote can tell you. It's only one case. And there are many others coming up against Donald J. Trump. But this one is so interesting. And it really is worthwhile taking the time, because it does take a bit of time to plow through it. But if you want to understand the persona, the constant lying, the conniving, the scheming, bringing other people into it, there's another person who's accused with him who's actually got an additional charge against him. It's a fascinating read, and there's little more to be said about Donald J. Trump, except to quote Donald J. Trump, I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and get away with it because I'm a celebrity. Maybe he's going to get away with this one too, but I don't think he should, because this really does show exactly what he is. He's a scoundrel, he's a criminal, and he belongs in the slammer.
And for people who know the phrase, a picture is worth a thousand words, to your point, Tom, some of the pictures that have been released here are absolutely, I mean, they're stunning.
Yep.
Classified documents strewn across the floor.
Yep.
Apparently, he had shown them to people. I mean, you don't even have to. You read the piece if you want to, but to see those pictures, wow, that says so much.
And interestingly enough, even the people who are the staunchest defenders of Trump, when they find out that he was revealing to absolutely unauthorized people deep secrets about, you know, contingency plans for a United States invasion of this country or that country, or their assessment of the weapons in this country, or what their own systems can and cannot do, secrets about how they gather intelligence and information. I think you'd have to be, you know, a staunch conspiracy theorist and believe that Trump really still has to come back to drain the swamp. There's probably going to be a few people in the States who believe that, maybe a few million. But I think that the average American actually cares about their country, about their freedoms, about the ability for their government to defend them. And I think that when enough people have read what this scoundrel was actually up to, they're going to stop defending him.
We're out of time, Tom. Does this change anything in Trump's bid to become president again?
Not really, because by the time any of this actually makes it to trial, we'll probably be well into the electoral period. But at the same time, there's another series of serious things. So compared to the very blunt object. That was the accusations for falsifying documents for tax cases in New York, which I think was basically a distraction. It broke the ice. It set the precedent. We can start indicting this guy. Now we've got something incredibly serious, brilliantly put together, well done. And then all the stuff about trying to fix the election, fraudulently going after the attorney general of different states and saying, fine me 11,000 votes and I can overturn the result of the election, that sort of stuff. I think he's going to have a lot more indictments on that. And that might be enough to stop him from ever becoming president again. Let's hope so. Let's keep our fingers crossed, because the man is a lunatic, a liar, and he's totally dangerous.
But other than that,
Tom, have a good weekend.
Is that all?
Have a good weekend, Tom. Tom,
take care.